Welcome in to Studio 2, actual Studio 2. We're back at our home base.
We
I'm Avi Wolf-Manarin.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Countdown to spring is on. Literally, we're hours away.
11 hours, exactly
from
11
hours. First moments of spring. And to kick off this new season, we're going to be talking about gardening.
Gardening. I know you're excited when you put that little music in your voice.
Exactly.
So lovely.
Yeah, and this is the perfect time to do this. I'm trying to start a little garden on my patio, so we're going to get all the... We want to have your questions, though. We've got quite a few today on our Studio 2 office hours on Instagram today.
Yes.
And you can get your questions in as well. We have Jenny Rose Carey, a horticulturist, and Sally McCabe from the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society coming in today. They'll be live in studio.
They will. Studio 2 at WHYY.org for your questions, or give us a call. We'd love to hear your lovely voices. 888-477-9499. Later in this segment, we're also going to talk about some potential changes coming to the ballot format in New Jersey.
It's a political controversy
right
now.
It sure is. And it's kind of a political boxing match.
Mm-hmm.
So we will talk with a reporter later in this segment.
Looking
about
that
how that
too.
Fight is playing out. But let's talk about some headlines
you
first.
You had some big things happen over the weekend, Avi.
Well, it's not about me.
Yeah.
It's not about me. It's
but
about
you were involved.
Kids.
It is about the kids.
I was lucky enough to be the official pronouncer for the Philadelphia Spelling Bee, which is the regional bee. And the winner of this bee gets to go to the big national spelling bee in Washington, D.C.
Which is pretty cool.
Very cool. It was a great competition this year. We had it at WHYY on Saturday. The winner was a fourth grader. I don't think we've ever had a winner that young named Jaden from South Philadelphia.
Oh, congratulations, Jaden.
Congratulations. He was amazing. And now he gets to go to D.C. for the big national bee. Are you curious about what word he spelled to win the competition? Are you curious?
I am. I want to know.
Okay.
I know. I want to know.
I'm going to play the official pronunciation of the word that Jaden spelled to win it all.
Let me listen close.
Topazolite.
Topazolite.
Wow. First of all, what does that mean?
I can tell you the definition.
Yeah,
I got it right here.
By the way, I need a definition, sir.
Sure, yes. A yellow or green garnet, especially andradite, topazolite.
And could you please use that in a
sentence?
I
could, yes. Sally, I was a great pronouncer, as you can tell. Sally used a small antique brooch set with a single topazolite as a shawl pin.
Topazolite. Go, Jay. And Jayden got this.
Yeah. By the way, if you want to try to spell topazolite,
Email us,
studio2@whyy.org.
Don't Google it, people.
Don't Google it. Why would you do that? Why would you Google it and then try to guess? Topazolite was the winning word.
Exactly.
It was the best competition I think we've ever had. And congratulations again to Jaden. And it was a lot of fun.
That is so cool. And this is your second year doing that.
Third year. Don't sell me short.
Oh, wow.
I'm an expert pronouncer.
There you go.
I flub every other word on this show, but I can pronounce like the Dickens when it comes to the spelling
That's
bit.
Some good stuff. Well, congratulations to Jaden. Fourth grader, killing it at the spelling bee. I look forward to seeing how Jaden does on the next round. So digging into the news, well, there's a lawsuit that was filed against a Montgomery County township, Avi, and they allege that officials have used tactics to stop the construction of affordable housing and that the reason behind the tactics are very unsavory. The plaintiffs in the case are developers behind the huge town center project in New Hanover Township. They say the tactics by those officials, they are all racially motivated, and that the delays have caused them over $150 million in damages. So how do you get to saying that, you know, everything is racially motivated? Well, the developers point to a township that has been marred by scandal. Back in 2019, two former New Hanover police officers went public with allegations that that department had been riddled with racism and a culture of intimidation. There was a probe by the AG, also an internal probe.
Wow.
And the lawsuit alleges that the sergeant from the police department that had been at the center of those allegations retired and then was appointed to the planning commission. And so brought a lot of that sentiment allegedly with this person to the planning commission. And they claim that, you know, the officials have been actively working to prevent the expansion of affordable lower income housing and multi-unit housing to keep minority populations out of that township. By the way, according to the developers, multifamily homes in that township account for less than 0.5% of the total land area.
Pretty eye-opening lawsuit. We'll see if it goes anywhere, but shout out to Kenny Cooper, who wrote this story for WHYY, which you can read right now on our website. Let's zoom out a little bit, Jerry. Obviously, the specifics of this case are disturbing, but they also point to a larger trend, which is that there's a lot of anti-development, anti-new housing sentiment in the suburbs. There was a fascinating story that the Inquirer did about this in August 2023. You can look it up. About this general trend toward what you might call NIMBYism in the Philadelphia suburbs. Amazing stat from that story. The city of Philadelphia in 2023 permitted almost as much new housing, this is new construction, as Bucks County, Chester County, Delaware County, and Montgomery County combined.
Wow.
It is very hard to build new housing in Philadelphia's suburbs, and a lot of that is by design, and it does have a huge effect on housing costs and affordability in our region, and I think we should do a show about it at some point.
I agree with you, and the thing is, younger people are having a hard time finding homes. Affordable housing is really tough to come by, which has led to our next story, Avi, which is like there's a lot of people who can't find homes.
Who are unhoused, yes.
And we're dealing with the optics of that.
Yeah.
And one of the places where the optics pretty visible, right, is at the Philadelphia International Airport. In late February, the Parker administration dispatched PPD to remove people who are experiencing homelessness from PHL. This is following up on the mayor's promise to improve the quality of life. Now, if you haven't been to the airport in a while, because not everybody flies in and out, an encampment clearing initiative at PHL went into effect from the 24th and ended March 10th, 24th of February and it ended March 10th. Folks had been setting up camp near the airport baggage claim area. And I mean, when I'm talking about folks, dozens of people. Anywhere a range from 43 to 75 people had sort of camped out near the airport. So city officials, they took steps to find housing for these individuals and to kind of get them out of that area. And this is not an issue that is only in Philadelphia. Other major cities like Chicago, Atlanta, also dealing with this. Because you remember back in the pandemic, Avi, shelters were taking in fewer people to keep them safer. And folks sort of like took up space wherever they could. They built a shelter wherever they could, like tents and stuff. And the airport was one of those spaces.
You mentioned optics.
Yeah.
I think that probably has a lot to do with what's going on here, right? The idea that you don't want homelessness to be in very visible
and the
areas.
First thing you see when you get off the plane as you're getting your bags.
Sure.
Yeah.
But of course, the humanitarian approach is to help people everywhere and to make sure that they can find housing, that they're safe and that they're cared for. So I hope this is not just a punitive sweep to make the airport look nice so that travelers feel nice about Philly. I mean, I want them to feel nice about Philly, but I, you know, you do get a little, sometimes when with stuff like this, I do think it's fair to pause and wonder what the motivations are and to ask if the people are getting the help that they need.
Yeah.
And I don't have the answers to that. I'm just saying I think it's fair to ask those questions.
And I mean, why do people like the airport? Well, Wi-Fi, bathrooms.
Sure.
You know, safety,
it has
right?
A lot of
near
life
transportation,
yes.
All those things. So this is definitely something to watch. I will say the mayor's budget increases funding to the Office of Homeless Services, as well as for affordable housing, which ties back to our other story. We need more housing for people.
I am going to do something now that may become a recurring segment on our show, or it may not. I'm calling it Avi's Tuesday Tangent.
Okay.
You have no idea.
I have no idea.
Okay. I'm going to start by playing a little music.
Okay.
You recognize that sound?
I've heard it before, yes.
Yes. It is the theme song for CBS's coverage of the NCAA men's basketball tournament, which starts today, Cherry.
Oh, okay.
They were talking about that on the newscast.
Mm-hmm.
There are no Philadelphia area teams in the men's tournament this year. There isn't on the women's side, but not the men's side. So I was wondering who to root for. And I decided to Google Maps and find out which school is closest to Philadelphia City Hall that's also in the tournament. And this is the school I landed on, just barely. It's this school, 85 miles away. Wagner College. You ever heard of Wagner College?
Absolutely not.
It is in Staten Island, New York.
Okay.
I had never heard of this school either. It only has 1,750 undergraduates. It's a tiny school, Wagner
but
College.
But they can play some ball, apparently.
About 1% of the school is on the basketball team.
Okay.
Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
But they got into the NCAA men's tournament. Another interesting fact about Wagner, it's in Staten Island. I just told you that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was founded in Rochester, New York. And then they just decided to move the school to Staten Island. They were like, we need a new campus. We'll just move it hundreds of miles. Kind of cool, right? So it's a funky school. It's the closest school, right?
Uh-huh.
It's a tiny school. I really want to root for them as my school
this
year.
It sounds like a school that you would be like, given all the facts, that you, Avi Wolfman Arendt, would choose to root
for. This would be my team.
Yes.
Here's the problem. They play tonight, first game, against a school that is very near and dear to Studio 2's heart.
Which is?
Can you guess?
No.
Not even going to take a stab?
I don't even know. If they're not in our area.
They're near and dear to your heart.
My heart. My heart? Howard?
Mm-hmm. Howard.
Your
alma mater, Howard. So I cannot root for Wagner College this year, despite the fact that they are the closest to Philadelphia. Because of you, I will be rooting tonight for the Howard, and I think this is their nickname, the Howard Bison.
That is correct, Bison.
Do we have a cheer for Howard?
Yes, how you say, like Howard Bison.
Bison. Okay,
exactly.
We will be rooting for the Howard.
That was a nice little
Bison tonight. And I'm sorry, Wagner College. You
I
are
had no
the closest.
Idea what he was going to say, y'all. By the way,
that is Avi's Tuesday tangent. And now, from basketball to ballots.
Yes, is a New Jersey political tradition unconstitutional? That was the question before a federal judge Monday. The case revolves around the practice of grouping party-endorsed candidates on New Jersey ballots. It's called the County Line Ballot, and U.S. Senate candidate Andy Kim says it is simply unfair.
And this might be surprising. New Jersey's attorney general seems to agree, or at the very least, he's choosing not to defend the state against Kim's lawsuit. Uncertainty now abounds as the June 4th primary approaches. To help ground us, we've got Nikita Buryakov, a journalist at the New Jersey Monitor. Nikita, thanks so much for joining us on the line today.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
So, Nikita, we've talked about the county line ballot system previously on our show, but before we dig into this latest round of controversy, let's break it down. How does this system work, and why is there a major issue with it at this time?
Sure. So New Jersey is pretty unique across all the American states in that in most of our counties, 19 of the 21, candidates and primaries are grouped by a slogan instead of by the office they're seeking. Now, the party organizations own a slogan and they award them in various ways. In some counties, the county chair just meets it out to whoever he wants. In others, it's a vote of committee members. In others, it's a vote of municipal chairs. But the effect is when you get to the primary, there ends up being one big column or one big row filled with people running from the top of the ballot all the way down to the bottom. You know, you have your president and your senators running in line with your mayors, your council folks, so on. And if you're not someone who's won that endorsement, a lot of the time you end up off in a tucked away in a corner of the ballot by yourself, maybe even bracketed with your opponents for the same position. And the effect the research is starting to say is that there really is a measurable advantage given by the party line.
So it gives party bosses the power to pick and choose who has that advantage, right?
In some counties, yes. The process for awarding a line depends on the bylaws of each individual county party organization. But yeah, in some counties, the chair could just award it. And in some others, you know, the chair's endorsement of a candidate is as good as it being awarded, even if there is a vote farther down the line.
Now, Nikita, I understand why this seems unfair, but why would it be unconstitutional? What is the Kim campaign's argument there?
Sure. So there are a couple of different claims. There really, I think, are two big ones. The most obvious one is that they say it puts a thumb on the scale. You know, if there's an advantage given by something other than, you know, a candidate's actions or their bearing or any part of the campaign, as it is alleged here by virtue of the ballot design, that's a violation of the Elections Clause of the Constitution. Further, they say that it violates their associational rights. These are First Amendment rights by forcing them to bracket with others. There's a situation in Monmouth County and here in New Jersey where Andy Kim, the congressman, is bracketed with Congressman Frank Pallone, who has endorsed his opponent in the Senate primary, First Lady Tammy Murphy.
Mm.
That's Kim said as much in his briefs. That's an awkward position for him to be in. And, you know, if he had the choice and if he wasn't giving up a measurable advantage at the ballot box, then it's a real question as to whether or not he would bracket with the congressman.
Interesting. And so now the attorney general for the state of New Jersey has opted not to defend this lawsuit, which is a very rare step for the attorney general's office. I want you to sort of talk about this letter that the attorney general wrote and why he took this step to not defend this county line ballot system.
Sure. So I can tell you from the get-go that reading the attorney general's letter is a lot like reading Congressman Kim's briefs. It cites the same stuff on associational rights. It says that the clerks haven't really sought to defend, I guess, in principle, the practice of the party line. They haven't sought to rebut any of the expert evidence that Kim has submitted that shows that it does grant an advantage. But I will say that it's a little bit too early to read into any effects that this letter might have, because there's no guarantee that it'll actually be included in the record. In New Jersey, or I guess in federal courts, the attorney general can intervene to defend a state law. The attorney general here just isn't intervening, which does mean that there will be fewer lawyers in the courtroom, and there already are a lot of lawyers in that courtroom. And it'll also mean that counties will bear the financial weight of that defense more than the state will.
There seem like so many possible paths here before this primary on June 4th. I mean, is there a possibility that the lawsuit will be resolved and that the ballot formats will actually be changed? Is there a possibility that the whole primary will be delayed? I mean, walk us through some of the possibilities now that we've reached this late stage.
Sure. So I hate to say this, but I think everything really is on the table. I don't think you're going to see the line immediately struck down forever, at least in the coming weeks. But there could be a temporary injunction to force the use of office block ballots, which are the types of ballots pretty much every other state uses in this primary. But it could go the other way. You know, I'm not a mind reader, and I don't know what Judge Qureshi is planning. And obviously, there is the question of appeal. If an appeal comes in, that could stay the injunction and bring back the party line ballots, or it could, you know, wear on for years. I will point out, this isn't the first case against the county line. And in fact, the Attorney General of New Jersey has interceded in some of these prior cases, including one filed by Christine Conforti, who was a congressional candidate in, I want to say, 2020.
And so I have as we get ready to wrap up this segment, I got to ask you, I mean, how does this affect the politics of the race that we're dealing with for U.S. Senate? I mean, you have Tammy Murphy, who would have benefited from this county line ballot system. You have Andy Kim, who says it's unfair. How will this affect the politics, the outcome of these elections here?
Sure. So that'll depend on what the judge eventually rules. But if he does go ahead and issue that injunction and then injunction stays in effect through the primary, then, I mean, that's a real big hit for Tammy Murphy. We've seen polling indicating that Kim is ahead by a fairly substantial margin with Democratic primary voters in counties that award their line through a vote of their committee members, especially when it's a secret ballot. Kim has dominated those contests, and Tammy Murphy has come out with the line in counties where chairs have endorsed her and where the process is just a little bit more closed. So if the line goes away, I think she'll have a very hard time in June.
Interesting. That is Nikita Buryakov, who is a journalist at the New Jersey Monitor, walking us through this ballot mess in the Garden State. Thank you so much for the time, Nikita.
Thanks for having me.
I said Garden State.
Transition. Okay. Coming up, we're talking about gardening and we are taking your questions. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back. Lots to come. Welcome back to Studio 2. I just love that music.
We were
vibing
in here.
It feels very spring-like.
Well, it is. Isn't that the name? It's Vivaldi, right?
Yes, I love it.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. I know almost nothing about classical music or gardening. I'm going to learn a lot this hour.
Mm-hmm.
Today is the start of spring. It's a chilly start, but it's still going to be spring. It's marked by the vernal equinox, mm-hmm. which happens at 11:06 tonight. That's when the sun is above the northern hemisphere, which makes day and night roughly the same length, and it means long sunny days are coming.
Yay! The daffodils are blooming. The trees are starting to bud. I imagine gardeners start getting really excited this time of year. They're itching to get out and dig in the dirt. So we thought we'd talk about spring gardening in this hour, and we have two experts and with us today in our studio to answer your questions and your comments. You can put your comments forward too. Whether you're a novice thinking about starting a small vegetable patch or a seasoned green thumb, Jenny Rose Carey is a horticulturist and the author of Glorious Shade and The Ultimate Flower Gardener's Guide. Jenny is here and Sally McCabe is also here. Welcome back. Sally is an Associate Director of Community Education at the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society. Welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you.
So glad to be here.
And the number to call for questions on planting, pruning, mulching, and more is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. Here's where I'm going to start, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I want to hear how a really great expert gardener lays out like a plot for the year. Like, is it a blueprint? Is it a document? Is it totally innate? How do you start a season? And I'm going to work backwards off of that because I'm not at that level yet. So
Not even close.
So Sally, let me start with you. How do you plan out a season?
I confess, I'm a really haphazard gardener.
Really? Oh. So I love this.
So,
okay.
I pretend that I'm planning ahead, but what actually happens is whatever seed I've got in my pocket is going to go in the ground.
It's that loose.
Well, I try to prep in the fall so that when there's a warm day in February or now March, I'm out there because my soil is already prepared. But we don't have time machines, so it's...
Not yet.
Yeah.
How about you, Jenny? How do you think about approaching a new season?
Well, my gardens, a lot of them are still already packed with perennials because I'm a flower grower. So a lot of them have got things that are already coming up. So my daffodils, like Cherry was saying, are already popping up. So my overall style, I think, is pretty packed and maybe a bit haphazard. Maybe Sally and I were, colluding on this. But I tend to just have my, I have a list of seeds that I'm going to start and I'm just making that list and then I'll think, okay, well, this bed, I try and do some, even though it's only flowers, not crops, I try and do some rotation around so that I'm not always putting the same things in the same beds. But I do love to grow from seed, so I'll just sort of think, usually by color. So I like having a hot color bed or a cool color bed or something like that.
And it's then, like conceptual, like
yes,
artistic. That's interesting.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it's
you're
not
so
like
much
a meticulous
more organized than I am. No, I don't know about
but
that.
But you can do it either way, which
yes.
is great.
Well, let me clarify that I'm talking about a vegetable garden.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where Jenny Rose is the flower expert.
Yeah.
And so she's got permanent infrastructure and backbones to her garden where I'm often working with a clean slate
every
each year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about both because I'm interested in doing some vegetables. By the way, we have a caller already on the line.
Of course we do.
And Michael.
Michael's
in the garden right now and is wondering about starting seeds. Hi, Michael. You're on Studio 2. What's your question?
Hi. My question is, any thoughts
on the difference between starting seeds with peat pots or soil blocking. Soil blocking seems to be becoming popular, and I'm trying it this year. Not sure I'm convinced that those soil blocks are going to hold together.
Michael, you are literally in your garden right now?
I can hear the birds tweeting back there.
I am literally standing in my garden pulling up Star of Bethlehem weeds from between the bricks.
Love this.
Nice sunny day, a little cool.
I don't know that terminology, so I'm just going to kick that question over to you. Jenny Rose, any thoughts on that?
Well, one of the things that I'm trying to advocate for is not using peat. So I actually don't use peat blocks at all. I don't use peat pots. I like the ones that are made from recycled newspaper that are being more available. And also at the flower show, at the Philadelphia Flower Show, I bought myself a new pot maker that you actually use newspaper or other types of paper, you know, and twist it round, and it gives a nice firm bottom to it. But I am a bit of a hoarder. I'm just saying that. And I do save my toilet rolls and my kitchen towel rolls, and I use just regular old non-peat based soil starting mix and seedling mix I use for that. But I do a lot by direct sow. And we've passed St. Patrick's Day, so I'm planting my sweet peas and peas this week. So,
And I want to sort of bring it back to, okay, because Michael was saying all this stuff, I had no idea what he was talking about. And so I want to just sort of ask you some very basics. If you're trying to start a vegetable garden, do you start with a seed, or do you start with the little plants that are kind of grown a little bit? And what are they called? Give us the technical language here.
Let me just give you a little bit of a timeline.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
If you're a new gardener, generally people start around Mother's Day. Because the soil is warm, and they grab all of their stuff from the box store, or and they stick it all in the ground Mother's Day, and then that's well past our last frost, and then we get our first frost in October around Halloween, and that's when they end their gardens. That's brand new gardeners.
Okay,
what we're trying to do is to educate people that there's another whole 6 months out there, and there is absolutely no reason you should not be, like Jenny Rose just said. Excuse me, I got mine in last week, but I planted a potato for St. Patty's Day because I, you know, McCabe, I'm required. Uh-huh. So gardeners, once they catch on that there's a whole spring season that starts in February a whole fall season that ends at Christmas, that's when you start to take advantage of the things that don't care about how cold it is. So right now, in the ground, you can be planting most of your greens. So that's lettuce, spinach, mustard greens, Chinese cabbage. Chime in if you've got some suggestions. You can be getting them all in the ground now.
Perfect. Okay.
You can also be getting most of your root crops, so carrots and beets and turnips and radishes.
Mm-hmm. And do you start it from a seed?
You can just put the seed in the ground.
Put some water on there.
If you're trying to get a jump on the season, then you can also now be starting. We usually have our last frost anywhere between next week and May 1st, because we just don't know what the weather is going to give us anymore. You can be starting other things indoors, and that's where you start with the little peat pellets or the pots, homemade pots or recycled pots.
We should answer Michael's question about soil blocking as well, because I feel like we didn't.
That's a good.
Do you want to take that or shall I take it?
Go for it.
Soil blocking is another way. You can buy either a little machine or you can make your own little like soil patties.
Yes.
If you imagine that, but they're sort of the ones that you can buy a metal machine to make them. There is a sort of recipe that you follow, and if you have clay soil, that's good because then you can use clay as binding. If you just use the stuff out of the bag, it's likely to just fall apart, and that might be one of the things that Michael was struggling with. You do have to treat them carefully and water them carefully, Michael, otherwise they will fall apart. And they're good for things that only need to be in that block for a little while, not in there for a long time.
Let me get a question in here from Vincent from our Instagram Live, who says, What are the easiest herbs and veggies to grow? What do you recommend for beginners, Sally?
Well, for now, for this time of year,
lettuce.
What's difficult?
Radishes.
Okay. What's a confidence-inspiring one to plant if you're just getting
going?
Well,
here's the thing. If you like radishes, radishes are going to give you instant gratification. Mm-hmm. They're going to, in 3 days, come up.
I love that.
28 days, you'll have a radish.
Visual confirmation. There you go.
Except that, do you really like radishes?
I'm not a big radish eater. Like, some people love radishes.
But there's some really cool radishes out there.
Mm-hmm. And crazy colors, too, sometimes,
Yeah.
There's like pink striped ones,
And the watermelon ones, the green on the outside, red on the inside.
See, Avi knows more than he's letting
on. I know how to eat, Jenny. I just don't know how to grow.
He's been keeping it a secret. So, right now, the easiest things, I've put peas in and my peas are up.
Wow.
Awesome. I just put them in and stood back.
And
just protect them from the bunny rabbits and things that might want to bite that top off.
Here's my suggestion for it. We don't know what the weather's going to throw at us, and we still could get 20 degree nights, and we still could get a foot of snow. But
don't say that.
So
you seem
that hurt just
our
hear.
Faces are both of our eyes are like what?
I mean, it's getting.
You don't know.
We've done the flower show now, so you
know. We got the flower show over. We got that day, that snow day. That was hysterical. What you do now is you put the expendable stuff in. You don't put expensive stuff in. Mm-hmm. You put things you can take a chance on. I mean, I have planted potatoes this week in the past and had them freeze solid after they came up in April. Yeah. We got a freak really cold night.
But you can protect them.
And you can protect them.
You can have like cloches, whatever you call them, and put them over all that.
Little mini greenhouses.
Yeah, or floating row cover type that very light, gauzy fabric that you can put over the top and just peg it down with pegs.
And that'll
keep
also them from the frost.
Yeah, run out and throw sheets over it.
Yeah, sheets is what I mean. I don't have that.
Put pots over it. You start to really practically get intimate with the weather person.
Yeah.
And did you see this email
from
Philip?
One.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Philip says, I just bought a house and the whole backyard is infested with this invasive species. Ugh. And also he said, I'm trying to learn to garden and be patient. Any advice for easy beginner plants to start with?
It's a similar question, but
invasive species.
But maybe also, Jenny, with that, could get into this sort of whether you should be planting more native species and how to embrace that. Because, you know, Philip's dealing with this unruly backyard.
Okay, let's do it. Okay, so, Philip.
Do it about a minute and a half before we go to break.
Philip, take a little look around your backyard and choose where you might want to put some nice native shrubs in. So one of the ways that you can do that is put down newspaper. And then if you can get some organic matter like, from your local township or leaf mold or something like that and put it over the top of it. And then you can just basically cut holes through it and plant through it. But also areas that you don't want to be dealing with, you don't want the weeds or the invasives to come up, you know, just cover those areas with this, you know, it's like a sandwich type layer and just let it be. You don't have to plant right away.
The rule is 8 thicknesses of newspaper.
Okay, 8 thicknesses.
The newspaper keeps that invasiveness out of your plants
for a while.
Yeah, and you can do cardboard cereal boxes. I like a lot, but not the one. You know, the big cardboard boxes tend to buckle up a bit, but you might have to keep the edges down with some stones or some rocks. Or it depends how windy your garden is, but it's a good way of preparing a bed for later. And, often you can do it in the fall for the spring or whatever like that. But native plants, there's many good nurseries around here that sell native plants. But you can also look at Mount Cuba, some of the other public gardens like Bowman's Hill up in Bucks County have their plant sales coming up right now. So look online and they'll be having, plant sales in April probably.
And ask like a friendly expert there which of these are native and what do you recommend?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
More Vivaldi there. That is telling us we have a break coming up, and we're going to stick with our great guests, Jenny Rose Carey and Sally McCabe, taking more of your gardening questions. We have some very specific expert ones right around the bend. That's all coming up on Studio 2 from WHYY. ¶¶ Welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolf-Manarant.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. With the start of spring, gardeners are cleaning up their beds. They're plotting what to plant, putting those seeds in the ground. We're talking about gardening with Jenny Rose Carey, a horticulturist and author of two books about flowers, and Sally McCabe, Associate Director of Community Education at the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society. And we're taking your questions. You can call us at 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org.
Yeah, get those questions in now. We have about 15 minutes left in this segment. So really specific question here from Sherry. Last year, my crimson sweet watermelons grew but didn't ripen before the tendril dried out. I don't know if it's my raised garden soil or if I didn't let them mature long enough from May until October. What did I do wrong, Sally McCabe?
I don't know what the days to maturity are for that specific one. But you got, if you got fruit and it got to the right size, then I would guess that we will blame the weather because what could you have done that made them not mature? Nothing. Yeah. You just need to know that you've got enough time between when the fruit forms and when the frost comes. Causing the tendrils to dry up, unless there was an obvious disease or everything shriveled up because of lack of water, because of the extreme heat of the summer, then we're going to blame the weather for it. We're not going to blame you. We're going to blame the weather.
I'm blaming the weather for sure.
Yeah.
And Jillian, Jen had this question. How can we ensure the survival of rose bushes and hibiscus planted pots and bushes in home gardens because of this erratic weather?
Yeah, I think the weather is always a topic of conversation for gardeners. Well, basically, you just need to, you know, as Sally was saying, make the weather people your best friends. And if you have them in containers, bear in mind that you can either move them so they can go inside into your garage or porch or something like that. Or, as we talked about with the other thing, cover them with a sheet or something like that. So, you know, just watch the weather, and it'll be it's the coldest before the dawn, so just look at that dawn temperature.
I want to add something. If on the other end, if it's too hot, they will burn. So if you can group your pots so that the pots shade each other and share the ambient moisture, they won't dry out as fast. They won't get as hot as fast.
Yep.
I mean, that's a concern with container gardens, especially look at the containers you're using. If you've got everything in black pots, they're going to get really hot.
Yeah.
Their roots will get really hot in the summer.
Let's bring in another caller because we raised the specter earlier of, I believe, bunny rabbits eating peas.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. This is another animal-related question from caller Eleanor. Eleanor, you're on Studio 2. What is your question or comment? Can you hear us, Eleanor?
Eleanor.
Oh, yeah, well, we lost her. Well, I can tell you what the topic was.
Okay, tell
it
us
was
the topic.
Deer-resistant plants. You knew it.
Yes, I knew it.
All right, let's talk about
time.
Deer, Jenny.
Okay, so basically we have an overpopulation of deer in our area. And they're voracious and, you know, they eat all of your most expensive things first and they're just a nuisance. So there's you can spray, you can grow things that are, you know, less palatable, like most of the herbs. I think one of your callers was asking about herbs and we didn't really get to the herbs. But any of the herbal plants like basils and thymes and, you know, all of the usual ones that we like, sage and things like that, are pretty much deer resistant. Plus anything that is fuzzy, like lamb's ears, is also. But look for pungent things, look for things that have a texture. Things like salvias are generally resistant, which is another useful one. What else, Sally?
Thorny things.
Yeah, but they'll eat rose bushes reason.
They have no upbringing.
Yeah.
Come on, deer.
They'll come up on your porch, but if you've just got to make life hard for them and, fence in an area if you can, you know, use some chicken wire or something.
Very interesting. We had quite a few questions on our Studio 2 office hours this morning about container gardens and urban gardening. So how do you sort of create One question related to porch flowers. How do you create, a porch filled with flowers? What kind of flowers work best in these containers? And how do you make your porch look amazing in time
okay.
for summer?
Well, yeah. First of all, I would say my general advice is go for things that you like. And I'm such a color person that if you like pink petunias, go for pink petunias, a lot of the things that, we used to grow, they've got much better versions of that will be self-cleaning, like those little tiny Calabrochia petunias that you don't even need to deadhead. But things like marigolds, zinnias, I like putting each one in its own pot. So then if it doesn't look so good, I just move it to the back and, bring the things that look nice to the front. And I like bigger containers, I've just said the converse, but the bigger, the better. And as Sally was saying, try and stay away from the black plastic ones if you can, because they don't, they tend to hold the heat and don't drain so well. And don't let them sit in water, none of the things. But lots of annuals, mix in some herbs for some foliage and being able to harvest, mix in some veggies, tomatoes in pots. Those mm-hmm. are good, like the mm-hmm. tumbler, the little sweet 100s in a big, like a half wine barrel, something yeah. like that.
Read the seed packets and the labels, because they'll tell you, often the name will say something
container.
Like,
Yeah,
container. And what container. Are some of the good, if you live in the city, you don't have an actual backyard, but you want to grow some of your own foods or veggies, what do you put in the pot?
Tomatoes, peppers.
Tomatoes and peppers.
Small squash. I don't grow pumpkins in containers. greens, mm-hmm. Both the summer greens and fall and spring greens. Cabbages. I've grown just about everything in a container. And like Jenny Rose said, the larger the container, the better, because you've got more of a buffer.
Yeah, if you forget to water it.
A small container will need to be watered twice a day in the heat of the summer. A larger container that is shaded by other containers or shaded that isn't in full sun will, they dry out so fast. Mm-hmm. So yeah. The larger they are, the more water they'll hold.
They'll hold, yeah.
And the longer it'll last. But containers have to be watched constantly.
And are we talking raised beds here?
You could do raised beds, yeah.
But I mean, we were talking porches.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Porches. Those yeah. are smaller
and,
containers.
And you need to do your research. You have to do your homework. And don't put a tomato in a four-inch pot. You put a tomato in at least a five-gallon pot, possibly
okay.
bigger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Match your containers to your plants, because otherwise you're stressing them.
Yeah.
Aw, stressing them.
I got to get my personal question in, okay?
Go for it.
I shared a community garden plot last year for the first time. I wasn't super involved, but I was technically one of the four people on the plot. And we planted zucchini, Sally. These things were like mutants. They took over the whole freaking plot. I mean, they grew to the size of like my entire arm. They were inedible. And I don't understand what happened.
Yeah.
Why are these? Is it something with the way we planted them? Are zucchinis just unruly? What's going on with zucchini?
Often in the city, we have problems with borers that get into the squash vine borers, and they get into the stem and they kill them. If that doesn't kill them, those zucchinis will grow forever. I mean, we used to joke about breaking into people's cars to put zucchinis into them.
Wow.
Because if your zucchinis are producing, your zucchinis are producing.
So you know? So don't plant them is what you're saying.
No.
Definitely. It was just too much. It was taking over the whole thing.
Put them on the edges.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Put them on the edges.
And do you just have to eat them before yes. they get too big?
Yeah. Well, you eat them, you freeze them, you make
I'm giving them away.
Bread,
yep.
You give them
you're bringing
away.
In
I ate so much zucchini.
You break into people's cars and you put them in.
Yeah.
But in England, we eat them large as marrows. So that's what we call
what's
a marrow. And you usually bake it in the oven and you scoop the seeds out of the middle, cut the ends off, and you stuff it with, breadcrumbs and herbs and other goodies and minced meat, if you like meat. And then you get it out of the oven and you slice it in. You get a ring of zucchini marrow. And then the goodies inside.
So even when they grow too big, I still can use them.
Yes, you can.
Okay,
they're very watery, but they're perfectly
right.
good. Yeah.
Victoria has a comment. Victoria says, I'm hoping to replant a small flower bed with native plants that goes from part sun to full shade once our trees' leaves start growing in mid-April. She says, I noticed that all the plant nurseries have the best selection in the early spring, but all of my research says to wait until fall to plant shrubs and perennials. I would so appreciate any suggestions.
I think there's two planting seasons in our growing climate. So any of the listening area, you can plant happily in the spring. You just have to make sure you tend to them and make sure they don't need water and things like that. But no, go ahead. Just make sure you rough up that root ball mm-hmm. when you get it home so that the roots can integrate into your native soil.
It is true that it's better to plant trees and shrubs in the fall because then they don't have the stress of the summer heat to get through.
But then you don't get the benefit.
You don't get, and you don't get the selection
the
fall.
I would go ahead and get them. I'd plant them. And
go for it.
Yeah, I would go for it.
Another question here from Joan in Philly who says, what should I do with leftover tulip and crocus bulbs that I did not plant in the fall? Speaking of fall, any advice for Joe?
Squeeze them.
Squeeze
them. Yes.
Yeah, as a stress ball? What am I
as a stress ball. No. Squeeze them and see if there's any substance left to them. If there's substance left to them, put them in the ground.
Yeah. So how would they feel if they have substance?
An onion that you'd buy at the grocery store. Okay.
Yeah. Squishy, I mean, they'll still have some bulk to them. Got if it. All they are is paper and husk. Then throw them away. Yeah. Put them in the compost.
Yeah.
But plant them.
Yeah.
They will not do anything this year.
They might not.
But they might not. But you're making an investment.
Yeah.
And you're trying not to waste.
Yeah.
And one of our questions was about growing plants from cuttings.
Oh.
They have their neighborhood. They trade cuttings.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you sort of grow a plant from a cutting?
Do you want to take it?
Sure. Just like you would a house plant, there are vegetables that you can take cuttings from. I mean, I have taken branches off of broccolis and stuck them in the ground and had them root. I've had cabbage.
So you can just take a piece of it, just plant it like a seed?
It's unusual. Yeah, I mean, sweet potatoes is a case in point. You can just keep breaking off branches of the sweet potato vine, stick it in the ground, and it will root in 3 days.
Wow.
You can take them and root them in water. It's more done with houseplants that people are trading.
Mm-hmm.
And it's two schools of thought. One is you root them in water. The other is you root them in soil. It's a personal preference. Yep. And it
or
varies. Try one of each and see which one works
for many,
you.
Many plants you can take, it's so much fun. Growing things from cuttings, growing things from seed. You know, you're basically making a new plant out of pretty much nothing. So go for it.
And the price is right.
Yes.
Yeah.
One more question before we get you guys out of here. This has been a ton of fun, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Callie has a pretty straightforward but maybe complicated question. Are raised beds better than flat garden beds? What do we say to Callie?
We say know what your soil is because in Philadelphia, raised beds are always better because I would rather bring in soil than dynamite.
Mm. Yep.
And I mean, we don't have a lot of many of the lots that we're growing on. The places we're growing have been houses in the past.
Yep.
So, you know, mostly house debris and bricks and bricks and bricks and bricks and bricks.
So context matters a
context
lot.
Context
so
matters
what you're
a
growing
lot.
It in matters. So, well, yeah. so you don't know you what's are, in the soil. Yeah,
yeah. But also from a gardening point of view, a lot of people for flowers or vegetables love raised beds because they warm up slightly earlier in the spring, if you're facing the south in particular. And then you can amend it, as Sally was saying, however you want and add more organic matter.
It gives you more control.
Yeah. So
And gardening is all about
Well, this hour has been out of control in some ways, but it's been a ton of fun, like I said. Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Sally.
Thanks for having me.
You just heard Jenny Rose Carey, who is a horticulturist and author of Glorious Shade and The Ultimate Flower Gardener's Guide. You also heard Sally McCabe, Associate Director of Community Education at the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society. And that is it for Studio 2 today.
And I feel pretty good. I think I'm going to plant some things.
I feel enlightened.
And you guys will be having all sorts of weird shaped vegetables coming into the office.
I want
cannot
updates
wait.
On the air.
Zucchini.
And that, friends, that is it for our show today. Our show is produced by Debbie Builder and Andreas Copes. Our engineer is Al Banks. This is Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. We'll talk to you tomorrow.